Hey everybody, this is the Brothers Whistle number 54. This is Greg coming to you from the motherland, Texas. Up in the top left, we have a surprise guest, a voice you all will know and love, no video. Well, I mean, there's a picture of him there, Justin Wilson.
Howdy, howdy.
There he is. And then we've got Thomas looking grizzly, looking rough. It's for the ladies.
Hello, everyone.
All the way from Slovakia.
Hello there.
And then we've got Mike Hammett from Chicagoland.
How's it going?
Going well, they said. I heard them all the way from here in the future. All right. So this one we've got, I don't know, four or five topics, and then we've got our recommended from Facebook. Mike's got this scheduled Facebook update that pops out and asks, hey, do you guys have anything you want us to talk about? And we'll I think kind of what we'll do is we'll paste all those into our Google Doc. We always work off of Google Docs. Anybody can get in there and do whatever. And we'll just sort of scan through. And if anybody that happens to be on the cast knows anything about it, we'll start talking about it. Otherwise, you're out of luck, guys. So starting at the top, Mike has sponsorship crap. It's a nice way of phrasing that. So with sponsorship, we're looking to any vendors that are willing to sponsor us. We promise we'll start being nice. Mike will start being nice. He'll stop hating everyone. He'll give honest opinions without hurting feelings. Like some of us are simple. You know, it's like, this is their children. You're telling them their kid's ugly, Mike. You got to be more graceful. Say, wow, he's very unique. You know, you got to say things like that. You can't just... Wow.
So then what I'm going to do is next time I see something that's crap, I'm just going to say, this is a unique feature.
This is unique. That's very unique. How different. You guys are brave. You guys are brave to do that. Yeah.
My target market was, for the vendors, although we'll take money from anybody, WISP always has this calendar. It's on a website. It's on a piece of paper. Sometimes it's on the back of your little ID badge. Sometimes it's in, it's always in their little app that sucks. And
you mean their app that's unique?
Yes. And so last year I thought, hey, let's put some of this stuff in Google calendars, and that's what everybody pretty much uses. You can take a Google calendar and integrate it into whatever calendaring platform you use. And so I started working on that. First I was putting in WISP centric stuff or generic stuff, then I started putting options. So I've got that actually finished up today, so we've got the entire WISPpalooza schedule in this Google calendar. And I thought, we're going to have some more people there this time to do some of the video recording. And so, I thought it'd be nice to have, some of these vendors, kind of help us get people there that aren't normally at the shows. And, so then I thought, how can I do that? Well, all these vendors have these trainings and, after parties and open houses and things, and people never know when they are, even though you get a ton of emails and there's the different calendars and you're trying to sort through all that stuff. But hey, someone can sponsor their entry on the calendar, then then they can see which trainings conflict with what other event that other day is here.
Gotcha. So in actuality, you made this for yourself and you decided you would share it with the world. Is that the idea?
Most shows I didn't actually go to anything anyway, other than the after parties pretty much, because I was busy doing videos and stuff. So hopefully I can do a little bit more of the sessions and things. We did have somebody do some sponsorship a little bit. Baltic Networks has given us a coupon code for their trainings that are out there. You get some money off if you get it, and then we get some money when everything's done. So then maybe we can pay for a night or two of the hotel or something.
Nice. Yeah, so speaking of Wispapalooza, I'm going to get to go for the first time ever. I think that's pretty neat. Having said that, I'm going to be pretty busy. I've got some new audio equipment, and we're going to pair that with a camera, and we're going to do some interviews. Actually, a lot of interviews. It's going to take a lot of time. And it seemed like people really enjoyed those last year, right? If you can't get there, you can sort of get a peek at what the vendors have new, you know, because that's what they want to talk about. They want to give the, if they've only got 2 or 3 minutes, they want to talk about the new stuff. So it's kind of a nice look in, maybe some firsthand impressions of what's going on. I honestly have never been to this thing, so I want to pretend like I don't know you guys. I mean, I'm going to do that anyway, right? You know, I just like from, I wanted to look at it from sort of a newbie's perspective. Like, if I've never been, I don't know what to expect. I don't know what to do. Just sort of get a feel for it, you know, and kind of document that experience.
Yeah, it's, I find that a bad idea. You know, maybe that'll encourage other people to go, you know, if it's really great, which it should be.
But, yeah. There's a lot of good stuff. Just looking at the calendar so far, there's a ton of stuff going on.
But,
we do have a couple, you know, I started the GoFundMe page, you know, partly for myself, but partly, you know, for us too. So we do have a couple featured people, to talk about it, before and during the show. We had towercoverage.com step up and BuySells, step up. And I think there's another one I haven't had a chance to pay attention to much in the last couple days, but. You know, so look for some information about what they're doing, and we're going to do some blog posts about them. And
that's cool. Yeah, and a lot and of these guys, I want to take it from a new guy's perspective. I want to talk to, I want to say, hey, BuySells, I sort of know what your stuff is, but you know, talk to me like I'm five. Tell me what's going on. You know, just give me the elevator pitch on this stuff.
Yep.
Cool.
And you know, when going back to the calendar thing, you know, it's a whole different feeling once you're at a show at this magnitude, because you have things coming from you from all sides, and since it's such a tight-knit community, you know, you're like, well, I want to go to, you know, so and so vendor's you know, after party. Well, then you got people you haven't seen for, you know, since last year that, hey, let's go to dinner. And you're like, well, you know, I'm hungry, but I want to go to this thing. And by the time you know, it's, you know, it's midnight. And Vegas kind of ticks me off a little because it's, you can't get food. You know, all the buffets close and even the Denny's closes.
There was one thing, because we went to that one mom guy, it was 5 years ago. In Vegas, that was on the heels of Wispapalooza. I didn't end up making it that, but it was 24/7 caramel apples. So I know there's at least that to eat. We frequented that place, but you know, it's something I've always, despite my great looks and my wonderful hair, I'm a very nervous person, you know, like I'm awkwardly, socially awkward. And so whenever I go to these things, I'm always afraid that they're going to be like super cliquish and nobody's going to talk to me and I'm just going to be weird, odd man out. But I've, you know, I've embraced that about myself, and I don't know, it is what it is. So I did one, what did I do? I did Nanog, and it felt kind of like that to me a little bit. I mean, I actually met some really cool guys and had some good conversations. But how do you guys feel about Wispapalooza? Is it sort of, would you say it's sort of cliquish? Is it pretty inclusive?
It's pretty inclusive because a lot of the operators, it's one of those industries, at least to me, that even the competitors are friendly to agree. I mean, you got your bad apples there that don't want to play well with anybody, but it's a very, I think it goes back to the original days of, hey, it's us versus the telephone company, or it's us versus the cable company. So that attitude's kind of stuck. And you know, you see stories of, you know, somebody driving 4 hours to meet somebody that needed a backhaul because their network's down. Nanog to me was radically different. You know, Nanog was very cliquish, very,
yeah.
You know, very elitist.
Yeah, it was the big dogs were there.
Yeah, and they have the swagger and the arrogance to it. Wispa, not so much. At least, you know, that's what I've seen over the years.
That's cool. That's cool. That may makes me look a little bit more forward to it. Do they have anything special for new people? Like, if you've never been there, do they kind of... Something Nanog attempted to do was, if you were new, they'd sort of try and pair you with a veteran. You know, that only went so far, but I didn't know if Wispapalooza tries to do anything like that.
I think you'll get a little first-time attendee. What are those, Mike? The ribbons or whatever?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like little ribbons to go on the bottom side of your ID badge. I think there's one that says first-time attendee or something like that.
So that's cool. You can at least be recognized, you know, hey, you know, this is my first time here. And, you know, I've seen people, and I've tried to do it to some people. Hey, you know, if I see somebody that's kind of doesn't know what they're doing, I don't want to say what they're doing, but, you know, they look like they're standing by themselves or whatever, I'll at least go, hey, how you doing? And
that's cool.
You know, that can strike up a conversation.
That's cool. See, I was going to ask if you guys reached out to the newbies.
It's probably not a bad idea to have something newbie focused, though. I'll bring that up.
No, I know. I know Nanog wasn't bad. It was just some of it was a little confusing, but mostly it was, I don't know, just sort of hard to break into a group.
Oh, something I just thought of that helps get people to know each other. On the first day of the official show. Nathan always does this thing in the morning, as a part of his, you know, opening remarks and breakfast and things. He does something called speed dating, where, you know, up on the screens they'll have a few questions, and you just go to a table, and like everyone goes around the table answering those questions. You know, some of it's, you know, introduce yourself, and then some basic questions about, you know, your operation or whatever, and then some more out there questions. And then when that round is done, you know, he picks something random, like, you know, who's wearing a brown shirt, stand up. Okay, now you move to a different table. So then forces people to go to other tables and, you know, meet other people.
That's cool.
Whether you're, you know, new or not, it's, you know, forces you to talk to other people. Assuming you actually follow what he says and you don't just sit there and talk to your friends all day.
Fair enough. I don't know anybody who shows up to conferences and does that and just hangs out with their friends the whole time. All right. You guys ready to talk about a little bit of gear?
Sure.
Are we to that point?
Let's do it.
All right. So MicroTik broke the internet with newsletter number 78, right? Who was that new guy that was conductor of the hype train?
Anton's or something like that.
There you go. There you go. Wasn't quite... I don't think it was quite internet breaking, but there was a lot of interesting, good stuff in there, right? So nothing new announced or anything like that. It's just some new pricing and, I guess, equipment release date-ish stuff. Number one, I think, that everybody's been interested in and kind of looking at is the new... It's the WAP 60, right? So it's a 60 gigahertz WAP. They sell in pairs. Obviously it's 60 gigahertz, so you can't go a huge distance, and WAP is sort of a smaller AP, so it's not a big focused antenna. But they're talking about 100 meter, it says 100 meter plus, but so it's basically, you can go the length of an Ethernet cable, with this wirelessly, and you can get a gigabit with it. They're sold in pairs, right? And they're pre-configured. So I think it just comes up as a transparent link, I think, as paired secure link, so I guess it's got encryption on there. What do you guys, what was the pricing on this? It's like $198 a set.
Yep.
So what do you think street price is going to be? Somewhere about 160 170.
Yeah, they don't, you know, I'd say probably, you know, in the 160 to 175 area, just looking at, you know, what other things are already out. One thing I did notice is that when they introduced them at the MUMS earlier this year, or announced them, the WAP 60 was up to 100 meters, and the LXG 60 was 100 meters or more. And now they've actually, you know, tightened that down to the WAP 60. I saw one of the Facebook groups, they said that it'll do about 120 to 130 meters. So they got quite a bit more gain out of that than they originally thought.
So if they're saying 120, 130, was that at like full modulation where you'd get a gig at that range?
There was insufficient information.
Gotcha. All right. Did I hear Thrift say something about these 60, these WAP 60 Gs might be point to multipoint?
Yeah. On the newsletter, it says that it's coming soon. And somebody from MicroTik said that they already actually have it working. It's just, you know, not public ready. I think some of that's due to it has a phased array, like beamforming antenna.
Right.
So that's like the most advanced antenna thing MicroTik has done. Which would mean that's...
This is the new hotness, right? Isn't this what like the other players are just now starting to do as well in the 60 gig?
Yeah, like, you know, like there's nobody really in 5 gig doing it, you know, other than Cambium on their 450 Medusa. And then Kenny's doing receive beamforming. And, you know, there's a couple of the 60 gig people doing it now. I suspect it's because it's built into the chip, so it's a lot easier. They don't have to do a lot of the math. But I would suspect that multipoint isn't quite ready yet because they're, you know, trying to figure out, you know, exactly how to handle the beams moving around and stuff and, you know, for multiple clients, yeah, make sure it's solid.
Something else that I thought was interesting and... I don't know. Maybe they made it fuzzy for a reason. But if you look at the announcement under the performance, you know, they show them doing a full duplex test, right? So you can see it's getting a full gig. But then they have this little chart right next to it to the right that says full duplex gigabit small packet performance, right? And so if you're using really large byte packets, you know, you're getting 100% full duplex. But then there's a stripe between... 1288 and 1928 where it cuts off and starts cutting down. I can't tell if your standard 1500 bytes are right at the 100 mark or a little bit less. So I'm not sure. So maybe they're, it looks like it's right about 1500 looking at it. I didn't like stick a ruler on it and a straight edge and any of that, but I'm assuming that it's, if you're at the 1500 byte range, you get the full duplex. If you start shrinking down, I guess, you know, with just a lot of really small packets, the speed's going to degrade.
On the one I'm looking at, it actually maintains 100% until all the way down to 192. That's the last 100%. And then 128 byte packets are only 90, and 64 byte packets are only 70, which is still pretty good for... Well, that's still awesome for $100.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's cool. Yeah. I mean, if you really logically look at how much performance you're getting for the price, it's pretty insane. I think it might have been Tom saying, I can't believe they wouldn't have just, you know, come marginally cheaper than the next closest product instead of just slashing the price as low as they absolutely did. You know, I guess his thinking, I think it was Tom, was saying that, you know, they could have squeezed some more margin out of that if they had wanted to.
Yeah, you know, get a little quicker return. Like looking at like the voltages, this is like the most power flexible device I've seen. It supports 12 to 57 volts, including AF and AT.
Yeah. So you can do AFAT or just non-standard PoE into this thing. Phase array 60-degree beamforming. Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to get a set of these and put them through the paces. I can see using these in a lot of different areas, especially in the future. Some of the stuff I've been chasing lately, I can see using it a lot. So I'm personally extremely excited about these, and as everybody else keeps saying, I really want to see the LHGs, right? And those are going to be the longer distance ones that Mike was talking about, the longer distance 60 kit. And if this stuff, I mean, honestly, they're $100 a radio, I can't imagine the LHG would increase the price that much. I mean,
yeah, like, you know, I don't I don't know how their WAPs versus LHGs compare right now. I mean, I'm not much of a MicroTik wireless person, but I'm sure the information's got to be there.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you want to... It's fun to speculate. What do you think, $150 a side? Maybe $160?
Sure, sounds good.
You dingus.
I think every manufacturer should do the PoE thing like they're doing. You know, hey, it doesn't matter. You know, if you want to feed this thing with whatever you have, it doesn't matter. That way, we support everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically they just say yes. You know, no matter what somebody's asking, yes. Does it do this? Yes. Does it do that? Yes. So, you know, just remove all the questions. That's like, believe it or not, I used to do wedding photography. And for like years we did that, and we started out with all these myriad of packages, right? And we move up and down, and by the end of it we had one thing, and we called it your wedding. And it's take it or leave it. It's everything. You get all the things. We don't have to haggle, we don't negotiate, just take the thing. And that's how I kind of see this. Take the thing. It's got all of the stuff. Don't ask me questions. It's there.
Yeah, it's, plug it into a Cisco switch, go ahead.
I love it.
It's a, you know, now I wonder how it will work with the like power polarities, you know, which polarities are on which pins, because Mimosa, while only taking 48 volts, they are very flexible as to, you know, what pins the power comes in on. Like, it's the most flexible, you know, power pin out I've seen. So I wonder.
Well, they're saying it's
flexible. That is.
They're saying it's AFAT, so I'm assuming it's going to follow industry standards for the most part.
I personally want to know how the LHG will actually work with the phase antenna design, because we know it's a completely, you know, different concept of how they are the reflective grid. So I wonder how that is going to play out. Of course, it's going to be a directional 60 gig link, but, you know, how much of a actual performance gain, and if it's built into the chip and etc., does it require the phased antenna design and the beamforming, etc.? And yeah, I'm just really interested how that concept translates into the LHG. And I would assume they would be cross-compatible. But, I mean, if you want to have an LHG on one end for some reason and the VAP on the other end for some reason, it's just an interesting thing how they take this into the future and what other products and how we'll integrate this.
I was really hoping that the LHGs would be compatible with the WAPs, because I was thinking LHG clients and a WAP access point for point-to-multipoint would probably work out. Yeah. I mean, you could get a little bit more distance out of it and still do multi-point maybe. But I don't know. I don't know how well it will actually work.
Just as a quick tangent, I just looked up the price for a current WAP and a current LHG, and the WAP is about, or the LHG is about 30% more than the WAP. So that would put the LHG at like $130.
That's not bad at all. That's insane.
I mean, you know, I don't know if it's going to, you know, bear out the same, but I mean, if it's under 150, that's a ridiculous price.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy, crazy. The only thing I wonder about is, will they be able to keep stock of them?
Yeah.
Or am I going to have to start hoarding these things so I'll have them when I want them?
Just buy a container of them because you want one?
I'm not above hoarding. I mean, I've done it before. Let's see. Scrolling down, they show the fiber box, which kind of looks like they have a CRS that's like 5 SFP ports. It sort of looks like this. Or actually, that one's 5 SFP, and then it's got a combo SFP copper on the back, so I guess that one's 6. But this appears to be similar. It's an outdoor box with SFP ports, so I guess this could be top of the tower sort of thing. Is that what you... I mean, what do you think you got? Like, in your opinion, where do you think they're chasing with this?
I think they're trying to do that. I think a lot of these companies are trying to chase the what the cell company guys call squids. They're usually a tower top device with fiber and power in them. So that's what powers there. The term in cell land is RRU. The actual antennas and the radios out on the antennas. So I think they're trying to get closer to that. You still got to have a separate something powering these.
Uh-huh.
So, even if all your radios have SFPs in them, you still got to get them powered somehow.
Yeah, I guess this would just give you isolation of equipment, right? So lightning or ESD is not going to ride an optical cable. But even then, this piece of gear is still up on the tower with it. So, but it'll also get you past distance limitations of copper. So if you're more than, really when you're doing PoE, if you're more than 290, 300 feet, this is probably going to be a better solution for you anyway.
And something I don't quite get on it is in the actual product PDF for the fiber box, it talks about PoE. Yet, and it comes with an SFP, but, the SFP's,
Yeah, the copper SFP, yeah.
Yeah. And so, but it's like, so surely it can't take power in that. Like, I see the power jack. That's obviously there, but, like, it was just a typo on their, data sheet, and it says PoE, but really it's, DC jack.
It could be, PoE, with, those P injectors that split it out, you have it's almost like a coupler at either end, and it breaks out one to a barrel jack, and the other is just the Ethernet port that goes in. You're right, though. Looking at the included equipment, they don't have one of those there, so.
Yeah, so it's like, so what is that, what's the plan? Or is it, I assume it's just a typo. It's not actually PoE, but.
That's interesting that they would have included a copper SFP with it right out of the box.
I'm going to speculate that, those aren't, as common as fiber ones, and maybe somebody just, they get it, they don't know what to do with it, so, but, here's
the copper. Does it have any kind of configuration to it?
It doesn't say anything about it. It's probably just default config.
I mean, if it's got if it's got any kind of interface, you're going to have to talk to the thing somehow.
It runs router OS.
So, yeah, that's probably the reason right there. How else are you going to log into it and, turn ports on or off or anything like that?
Yeah, there's no console port. So
yeah, you're going to need a copper SFP to do it.
Look at you, Mr. Thinker. There you are. That does make a lot of sense.
Oh, the there's a DIN rail mounting kit as well.
Yeah. And it's showing street price is $79. So that with the copper SFP, that's pretty good. Those little dudes aren't usually that cheap. All right, moving right along. They're showing the RB1100 AHX4. We've already talked about that. It's just a revamp of their 1100 with dual power supplies, which is nice. It's also got a DC input in the back, and then it's more kick, more power.
I had no interest in the Dude Edition, knowing that there was a not Dude Edition planned. I don't need hard drives in my routers at all my towers and stuff. So, and it's $50 cheaper without getting all that stuff. It'd be nice once that starts coming down the pipe.
Yeah, from the outside, you'd never know it was any different than the other one. You still have, 13 ports, serial port on the front. I mean, the case design even looks the same. It's just silk screen slightly differently. So it's $299, $300. It's pretty good, pretty solid.
Retail on that, I would expect probably about, $250, $275.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. Now the MUPS is in there, which Thomas and I were way too excited about before because we didn't realize it doesn't actually have a router board.
Oh,
all the broken hearts. It's neat. It's basically a PoE injector that you can stick a battery onto, and so it'll constantly charge the battery. If there's a flicker, a sag, or the power just drops altogether, the battery will pick up and charge. They actually say that you can use almost any battery type. They're saying even car batteries. Usually a charger, like a small charger, doesn't have enough kick to charge a car battery, but apparently this thing does. It looks, just from the pictures, it looks about the size of a WAP. Do you guys think it's that big, or is that picture just misleading?
It seems to be the same case. Even the, like, the back wall mount is the same, so.
All right. So this thing is larger than the average bear. It's doing more, though, right? So that's not surprising. They also say that I was reading about it. It said something about, here it is. It's possible to detect when running on battery power by monitoring the input voltage with scripting, since the voltage will change without a RouterOS reboot. So
I'm
guess.
Sorry. I'm sorry, my critique, but what?
Yeah, at first, you know, I mean, they said there was going to be some kind of pairing intelligence or whatever, so I thought that this thing was going to be able to somehow communicate, but I guess, yeah, you're just monitoring line voltage and you'll detect a difference whenever it kicks over to battery, and maybe as the voltage starts to sag, you can have it send alerts like, oh man, you're almost out of battery life or something like that.
I think MikroTik missed such a big opportunity to make a good device that would do this and then have some intelligence and monitoring and everything else in it. But to me, this is just useless. If I can't monitor it, if I cannot pull statistics out of it, if I cannot see an alert natively, then, you know, what is this for?
Yeah, I guess thinking about it, you could do a script so that when you SNMP poll, it could tell you the voltage, right? Or do they expose that already?
Anything that I have to do with scripts inside RouterOS is just a big no. First of all, if I need to deploy it massively, now I have hundreds of scripts running that I really don't want. Second of all, if I have to manage it, right? If I want to change anything, then I have to re-script and I have to redeploy the script to who knows how many devices. And the MikroTik scripting language has changed multiple times in the recent years, and it's common that... they actually change the syntax and break something in existing scripts just by upgrading RouterOS, etc. It's just not a scalable, not a professional, not a solution that I could really recommend to anybody.
Gotcha. So in a perfect world, what would your version of this thing look like?
So pretty much the same, but scratch that last sentence, not the same. So a device like this that I could actually plug in power to, that would give me, and of course a battery, that would give me complete monitoring of, you know, is the power present or is it not? How much am I drawing in voltage from the power port? How much battery is there left? You know, what's the discharge rate, etc. So all of the actual statistics that you want from a battery backup system should be available over SNMP and etc. So if it had that, if it had the intelligence, then it could do the same thing, right? Just one device which you connect the battery to, which manages the battery and outputs PoE, but it gives me all of that information, all of that data that I really want, that I can plug into my monitoring and know what's happening without having to do some crazy fix.
So it'd basically be this thing, but inside the case there's a little microcontroller that sort of taps into these pins, so it's almost like a switch, and it gets an IP address, and you can actually monitor. You can add that thing into your NMS sort of thing.
Normal RouterOS, you know, why not? It's having a really cheap RouterOS board in there, or a really cheap PCB with a cheap processor that can run RouterOS, just a 400 megahertz cheapest MIPS processor. You know, it would add $15, honestly. And for $15 more, this would be completely worth it to me to have that RouterOS, have that management, have that visibility into what's happening with this device, and mainly with the rest of the network that I'm powering with this device.
So almost like a Hap Mini built into this thing, just something like that.
Yeah, something like.
So you could almost double it as the CPE router, like at the customer site sort of thing?
Not really, but okay, so what we do with our sites, on every single of our sites, we have a little router board. Historically, it used to be a 951. These days, it's mostly just a CAP or something similar that is in there just to broadcast an emergency management Wi-Fi if the backbone link breaks. So what happens if I lose upstream connectivity and the tower or the retransmission side or the micropop, because we do a micropop infrastructure, if the micropop loses management connectivity and the micropop is on somebody's house, you know, like you make a deal with a customer that I will put up a micropop and you get internet for free and blah, blah, blah. And let's say that something breaks at 2 a.m. in the morning and suddenly you need to go and fix that, right? So we have a little wireless router board on every single of our towers, micropops, retransmission points, etc., that just broadcasts emergency wireless Wi-Fi. So what I do is I just park my car under the customer's house at 2 a.m. I don't have to care if the customer is home. I don't have to care, you know, phone him, can I come, you know, get keys, blah, blah, blah. I just park my car under his house and I already have an emergency management Wi-Fi broadcasting and waiting for me, which I can use to connect to this. And if it's a configuration outage, solve it. If it's a physical outage, of course, this won't help. But so this device would be useful for that, even that, you know, it would give me all the battery statistics, it would give me everything, and as a bonus, it could double as a emergency management solution. So why not make a device that would have all of this in it, that would allow me to just do everything from a one device, and it would cost, what, 15, 20 bucks more? Yeah, I would do it.
Yeah. So I don't envision these at, like, every customer's house. Do you? I mean, I don't see most customers giving a crap about putting a battery back up on there.
No, not customers. Definitely. Right.
So you're going to use this at a micro pop, or maybe, do you think they envision these being used at towers?
I don't know what the MikroTik thinks this will be useful for. I personally don't have a use case for this at all, because just know if I can't manage it, if I can't get information out of it, if I can't plug it into my monitoring, then for me, for my use case, it's just not useful. And so I can answer that question, because I could
see them being useful in a like a municipal Wi-Fi. Maybe you have an AP going up a light pole and you have very small space at the bottom. You know, you can't put a big box on every light pole for every AP.
Right. You could just do kind of a small pack. You know, something else I was wondering is, say you did have a micro tower site where you need to power multiple devices. If you had more than one of these and you had them all hooked up to the same battery and they were all attempting to charge it at the same time, do you think that would be okay?
See,
like, I don't know what it would do electrically. It seems like it would be fine, but I don't know.
See,
I don't know if they'd have over voltage protection or not.
All of these things to me are like, when you are building a solution like this where you actually want battery, and even if a space is issue, most of the cost will realistically probably be the battery. If you want to have any decent size capacity, you know, the battery will be the cost, and then this device is like, okay, whatever, you know, 30 bucks. So why not just do a normal charger with a little microcontroller thing where you can even do like relays? Because what we do with our boxes, every single of our micropops or every single of our towers, we actually have relays for the doors. So when somebody opens the doors on the box, through a magnetic,
reed switch. Yeah,
magnetic switch, it trips a relay on our management box and I get a warning in our monitoring system, because I definitely want to know when somebody's opening doors to our boxes, right? So if I'm already doing something like this, if I already need power backup, if I already have a box somewhere, then it doesn't make sense to me to shell out 30 bucks for this when I can shell out about 20 bucks more for a microcontroller and a battery and have all of this plus monitoring plus other things like, you know, tripping relays when somebody opens the doors, etc. And space-wise, I don't think it makes a difference anyway. You know, a microcontroller and a charger doesn't take more space than this. So it's the space, the battery will be the thing that takes the most space again, and the most cost, and the most everything. So
gotcha.
Okay, that's my rant. I'm done.
Well, if you had a customer that wanted to, I don't know, do a thing, would you recommend this, or would you tell them to just get a little crappy desktop UPS and plug their stuff into that, like, given the option?
That depends. I'm not saying this doesn't have use cases. It probably does, you know. But I don't know. I would have to think about the specific, you know, use case. Where do we want it? How do we want it? Blah, blah, blah. But out of top of my head, I don't think I would recommend this for anything, because I think there is a better option that's not cheaper, that's not bigger, that's all the things that I've described previously.
Yeah, there's usually when you're talking about Wisp guys, there's usually a better option, but we're too cheap to go with the better option. So I see why something with a smaller price tag appeals.
I mean, if really like $15 is the difference that will be the differentiator between this and something better, then you probably have other issues than, you know.
Well, and think about maybe not necessarily Wi-Fi devices, but maybe PoE cameras or, you know, other devices that aren't customer accessible devices. I have a buddy who has a wireless sensor on his gate to his house. So, you know, he rolls up to the gate, punches in a code on his app, and the gate opens. Hmm. And it does that via a Wi-Fi connection. Power goes out to that. He's got to get up, manually flip a switch, and then the motor, you know, disengages.
Right, and if the power is out, it's because it's the middle of a rainstorm and he really didn't want to do that?
Yeah. And, you know, if he, the little Wi-Fi thing that opens it it's an add-on. So he can swap that out for whatever. It's just an IP-based connection. So he could really, if the technology gets bad, he can always swap out the AP, and if the AP can be individually powered, then yeah, sure, the AP is not drawing much power, but you know, if he's able to make the runtime on the gate, hey, I'm not having to power the AP, then that has batteries available to actually operate the gate when needed.
True story. All right, let's keep trucking down the list. There's the M11G. It looks like a really small router board. It looks like just a bare board. There's no case.
It looks like, to me, it's like just like an updated version of the 411.
Yeah, it's 880 megahertz, mini PCIe slot, and it's got a SIM slot on there. So I guess this would be, and it's got a gigabit Ethernet port on it, so you could use it as what, like a 3G LTE hotspot sort of thing?
There's no built-in Wi-Fi, so you would have to have two of them. One to bring...
Well, it's got a SIM card slot, so you could just chunk a SIM in it.
And like, you could have, one of these set up as a, 3G, 4G that dumps to Ethernet, because there's no...
Yeah,
because you still have to plug in your 3G, 4G card.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one, I suppose.
Adding a SIM card's not going to get it, not going to get it cellular.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know enough about that stuff. It's about $40. Do you know where this product fits in? I'm not really sure in their lineup.
It's been.
I know you don't do the Microtik wireless mic. Golly, we get it. Beat the dead horse some more.
It might be a replacement for the 911.
Oh, okay. Easy peasy. See, Mike, that was the answer I was looking for.
Well, like I mentioned this earlier, but looking like a 411, so it, whoever replaced the 411.
Yeah.
So, the 911 is actually used in a lot of Microtik products. Even the QRT, for example, is just a 911 inside the QRT with the antenna also as a one Microtik kit, right? So, internally, Microtik is using 911s in a lot of stuff. So, I think this is just a generational change, and the 911s will probably be phased out slowly in exchange of this in all of Microtik's integrated products, which is good for us. It's got a faster processor and...
MediaTek dual core CPU 880. Yeah, it's got a little bit of kick. For sure. Let's see, they also have the hot swappable Power Supply, Neg 48, DC Telecom. These are for the CCRs. I know Andrew Thrift has been screaming about these forever.
He was quite excited when he saw those.
Yeah, he was. And he's like the only guy I know that still uses Neg 48 stuff. Like our old facility still has some, but it's all it's been abandoned. We just have it all turned off.
Like most of the WISP stuff is moving to positive 48. So if they made an isolated power supply where it worked with minus or plus 48, then that'd be great. Because more WISPs are moving to DC plants versus a UPS, and so then it wouldn't, if it was isolated, it wouldn't matter what voltage or what polarity the site was. But now you got to do special stuff with this guy to use it if you've got a plus 48 environment.
For sure. So they also list on here a wireless calculator. I'm assuming it's got all of the gear in there. You can swap around. Select transmit device, select receive device. There you go.
It doesn't have 60 gig for their new Web 60. But then it doesn't... I've seen someone else comment that it didn't have any elevation or terrain information. It's just a basic... wireless path calc.
All right. It's, first pass. I'm sure they'll add some stuff to it. Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a online service, so, it could change by the time we're done recording the show, for all I know.
All right. They also announced the S Plus RJ10, so it's a copper 10 gigabit SFP Plus interface.
That is way cheaper than what's on FiberStore, and it's a whole lot more flexible.
It's $65 is what they're saying the street price is, so it should be slightly less than that.
Yeah, I think FiberStore, I'm pulling it up now. I think when I looked last, it was like their RJ45 one was like $300.
And they're also saying it's 30 meters is what you can get on this thing.
$380 is what's on FiberStore.
Oh, wow.
This guy's only 65 or whatever it was.
Yeah, 65 is what they're saying the street price is going to be. That is significantly less expensive.
And it does 5 gig and 2.5 gig Ethernet as well.
That's crazy.
And if you put these guys talking to each other versus talking to other brands, you actually can go more than 100 meters. So 1,000 base T and 2.5 gig can go up to 200 meters.
That's insane.
As opposed to just 100.
It says, any Microtik device that supports SFP Plus ports can now be used without installing any fiber. So it's basically saying this is anything with an SFP Plus port that says Microtik, they're guaranteeing that it's going to work. So that's pretty good. I doubt you're going to be able to plug it into your Cisco kit. It's probably not going to recognize it. But a lot of people likely will. I wonder if it's going to work in the, what is that? The Ubiquiti switch that's got like 16 SFP Plus ports or whatever that is.
They're XG16 or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That'd be cool.
Get one and find out.
All right. The Wubum USB, they're saying that's coming out for $16. That's kind of their out-of-band management. Looks like a thumb drive if you plug in there.
For $16.
Yeah, I don't have any CCRs, but I might buy one or two of these just to have one. It's any router board USB, not just CCRs. So it'll do
any router board. Now, granted, you probably have to have control over the Wi-Fi, which might put you in a catch 22.
Oh yeah, like if you're at a data center or something like that.
Yeah,
a lot of data centers that I've been in, they have open Wi-Fi, but you have to agree to something. So, you know, that becomes a little bit of an issue.
Yeah.
What do you mean? This should act as an access point as well, right? So it will broadcast a separate Wi-Fi for you, which you can connect to.
Yeah, I think you can just jump straight onto this thing.
Yeah, but if you're, you know, I'm thinking, okay, if it's out-of-band management, you know, how many times can I, you know, am I not available to plug into the thing rather than go to Wi-Fi? Am I that lazy if, you know, if it's a router in a data center, like what you're talking about, Tomas, earlier, you know, driving up to a customer site, okay, I could see something there for sure.
Well, like in the data center environment, you could have, it says it can be an AP. I wonder if it can be a CP as well. So then you have, okay, yeah. Yeah, so you just have one AP. You associate all these woobums with the one AP, and then you just join up, and then you can console into anything.
Yeah.
I just like saying woobum.
Woobum.
Yeah, it can do both, right? You can run it as an AP or as a client, yeah.
I'm still interested to see how that actually functions. You can telnet from your PC directly into the thing, but I guess I'll just have to wait until Baltic has a couple. And
oh, so on the router board, it's just like another serial port.
Gotcha. All right. So we beat that one to death. Let's move on to a little bit of other equipment. Ubiquiti just released a new UniFi AP. It's the UAP-AC-SHD. From what I can tell, it's got pretty much the same specs as the UAP-AC-HD, so the regular HD ones. They apparently have the same speed, AT compliant. They both have 2 gig interfaces, 500 plus users. The price tag is $200 more on this thing. I think it's got an internal access point, right? Isn't that the claim to fame of this thing? So it's constantly sniffing, so it can do airtime, air view. I think they're looking to do some compliance, like some WIPS compliance stuff.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of taking their you know, Air Max AC stuff they've got, you know, with secondary radio for doing AirView, and I think just bringing that into the UniFi world, and then, you know, various other security things. I'd be interested to try it out for like the AirView aspect, but then the only APs around here are mine, and so not really going to see much.
I wonder when these things are going to start hitting distributors.
I think they've been getting better at their lag time from when they say it's available to when it actually is. So probably pretty soon.
I got a project coming up pretty soon, like in the next couple months. Maybe I could try these out. Although I generally shy away from trying out equipment when it first comes off the factory.
Nah.
Okay.
Is that my money?
Yeah, right. Fair enough. Let's see. What else did somebody talk about? Outdoor equipment. We talked about some earlier. Some outdoor boxes. I can't remember who found it, but what are these things?
I think that was Miller, I think, posted that one.
There you go. IOIO box.
I've seen some people say, that's amazeballs. How many can I buy right now? And some people say, that's ridiculous. Why would I buy that?
So it's basically an outdoor hardened weatherproof enclosure for, I guess, base of tower, things like that. Pop sites where you need a little bit of room. 19-inch, made in the USA, which means it's going to be more expensive. I think it has some natural ventilation with some guards to keep the bugs out. I think they said they also have a version with active cooling in there, some air conditioning, or maybe it's just a fan. I'm not sure what the difference is. It's lockable on the outside, mountable in pretty much any orientation you can think of. I want to say street price, was it $1,300, Mike? Somewhere in there?
Yeah.
All right, so it's not the cheapest thing I've ever seen, but
Yeah, they're proud of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly sizable, so it's not just going to disappear on the side of a building. It's very noticeable. You've got, I mean, it looks like plenty of room for just about anything. Install a dividing shelf so you can have your batteries at the bottom, your equipment up above in the rack mount area. That's neat. You guys can click the links. Tell us what you think about this outdoor box versus other outdoor box. I'm actually really curious about that.
I don't buy these configuration of boxes. So maybe $1,300 for something like this is normal. I don't know.
Yeah,
you
I don't know either.
You know, I buy smaller wall mount things.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just curious to see what other people use for boxes, either in this specific instance, or say it's going to be something mounted to the side of the building. You just need a moderate amount of equipment in there, maybe a switch and a little bit of other stuff, but nothing too extravagant. I would really be curious to see what people tend to use for those.
If you're buying a lot of one-offs, you know, you don't need to outfit 10,000 cell sites. There's enough surplus stuff out there where that's what a fair amount of people are doing, is they can find, you know, a half dozen pedestal cabinets for pretty darn cheap. The expense is always getting them to you because they are big stuff. But you can find a comparable cabinet that's a surplus cabinet for $400 or $500. But
so is that eBay or is that through like a surplus dealer?
Surplus dealers. Several outlets you can look on. But like, it's not very scalable. So if you want to standardize and say, hey, every one of my cabinets is going to be this one, you're not going to get too far.
Yeah. True story.
And I guess in a larger WISP where you've got more techs of varying capabilities, you might spend more money trying, custom doing other things or having one-offs versus having everything be the same. If your guy's a tower guy but he's not a thinking guy, if every box is the same,
there's definitely
$1,300.
Standardization is nice. You know what to expect everywhere you go. Let's, before Thomas falls asleep on us, do you have any interesting Unimus updates, Thomas?
Yeah, always. what we've been working on for the last couple of weeks now is we've got a new website. So completely redesigned, much more professional looking, about time. So on the other front, we released 1.2 beta, and it has the new config search feature. So basically what you can do now is if you want to know where, everywhere, and how, let's say, VLAN 102 is deployed. We have a config search, you just go there, you type VLAN 102, and it will actually show you everywhere that is configured across your entire infrastructure. And of course, it's pulling it from the actual device configurations across your entire network that Unimus pulled. And it's also got a regular expression search, so you can do all kinds of crazy things there. Like what I do when, I like to leave comments on everything that's temporary, that say temp. And of course, temporary things become permanent, and then across my entire network, I have a bunch of stuff that has temp comments that I forgot to remove, and that really pissed me off. So I wrote this, and now I can just go into Unimus, type in temp, and I can see everything that is supposed to be deleted across my entire network. So that's the feature, and it's out in 1.2 beta, which is on the forums, and. Yeah, I like it. It's just really nice and fast to be able to find anything in configurations.
Yeah, that's super cool. How about the cross device diff comparison?
That's a bit older.
But I don't know that we've talked about it in a while.
Actually, yeah, I haven't been on the podcast in a while, so probably
it's been
not.
A minute. Oh, yeah.
That's actually live in the production version, and so you can now select two different devices and do a nice diff. Of config between devices. So if you have like VRRP or if you do Cisco HSRP routers and you want to see the difference in configs, you know, you just select the devices, quick diff, and you can immediately see what's different. We also did like a nice split diff window, so you have now options to either show a diff in, you know, one together view or a split view, and just quality of life features, things that people requested.
So now, how long until I can take this this new, you know, entire infrastructure, you know, regex searching to find all the routers that have my temp, you know, comments? How long until I can delete that from all the devices across my network?
With Anonymous.
With Anonymous.
No comment.
Please don't put it on the feature request, Mike. Don't be that guy. All right, guys. So we were looking at the list from the recommended Facebook. Hey, can you guys talk about this sort of thing? One is switch-centric versus router-centric networks. That's a whole can of worms that we've already hit the hour mark, and so we'll save that one for next time. We have another one that's white box switches. I think we talked about that two casts ago. We even looked up a bunch of the fiber store switches when we did. MikroTik 60 gigahertz plug and play. We beat that one to death. Business development. That one's kind of a long one too.
I suck at that anyway, so.
Yeah, none of us would be on here talking to you guys if we knew how to do that, right? Another one is talk about the CBRS rules, change in the FCC and junk, as it were. Wilson said that there's a pretty good buy-sells piece on it, and we will link you guys to that.
I think they did one on like a Facebook live stream, followed up a couple weeks later by one on YouTube. I don't think they were meant to have the exact same content. I'm sure there's a lot of overlap, but no. I guess we'll link to both.
All right, sounds solid. All right, so let's stick a fork in it. Mr. Wilson, Justin Wilson, if people want to find you out on the internet, how do they go about doing that?
The easiest way now is j2sw.com. That's going to be the jumping off point for everything Wilson.
All the Wilson you can handle.
Yep, all the Wilson all the time.
Yeah, like, Mister,
now I figured you would say if you want to reach Justin Wilson on the internet, go to gofundme.com/2017. Justin will find you if you give him money.
What are the unlocks in your GoFundMe campaign?
I didn't get too crazy. Most of it was sponsorship for us. So some of that money that's left over is going to go to supporting us out there. I threw in some consulting time. I've had a couple people do the consulting time at a discounted rate.
That's cool. How about the sexy calendar? What donation level is that one?
Yeah.
There is somebody that did pony up for the top, the you know, top level. So I'll see if I can't convince them to ask for one.
You know how I said I did photography earlier? Don't ask me to take the pictures. Yeah. I'm gonna have to recuse myself. I'm too close to you, Wilson. I don't know that I can hold myself back. All right,
I'm in the process of making shirts. I'm trying to find a sneaker net logo. That's the inside joke there.
That's cool. All right. Thomas Kernick, if people want to get a hold of you on the internet, how would they go about doing that?
Just Google my name. I'm very easy to find. And anonymous.net. And that's that. I'm on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever. Just you'll find me. If you want to find me, you can do it.
It's not that hard. All right, Mr. Hammett, if people are going to get a hold of you out on the interwebs, how are they doing that?
I think I said it best in the last cast, where if you can't find me, I probably don't want to talk to you.
It's too easy to find. Well, in all honesty and all earnesty, all the content you guys see, really, I can safely say all the content you guys see is aggregated, or all the content on Facebook that you guys see is aggregated by Mike. He's the one who tends that garden very well. He's very quick to respond. He's not going to beat you up, sponsors, if you happen to put anything on there, or vendors. He's going to be nicer. He's not going to kick anybody in the junk anymore. But yeah, definitely big thanks to Mike. Most of our little tidbits get aggregated from the Facebook news feed that he puts in there. So again, all of you guys with the suggestions, that's awesome. I love that, that feedback, because otherwise we're just, you know, just shouting out into the ether and we don't really know what anybody wants to hear about. Circling it back around, if you guys want to get a hold of me, you can find me at gregsoul.com. I've been crazy busy lately, so I haven't had much time for consulting. I'm trying to sort of come back around. One thing, oh yeah, I'm supposed to pump my Lynda. Go to lynda.com and click on my videos if you have an account. It helps feed my kids. I do that. Tom's been chastising me lately for not saying that, so there you go. It's for you, Tom. What else? We've been talking about doing a Patreon campaign, or, and when I say talking about, Mike's been just hounding me about it, which I need to get on. I actually created a Patreon account today, so I need to see that through and finish that stuff out. It's going to basically go to, I guess, just covering people's expenses if we can, to various things, and I guess if anything's left over, it'll buy cheeseburgers.
The reason we talked about this on and off for a couple of years, and there was never really like a real need for it, and now that we're sending more two guys going to the show, pretty much like their main thing is to do recording, covering their expenses and stuff, and if the past month or two is any example of what the vendors think of us, it must be doing it for the people. So then, since I'm too honest about the vendors, too boldly, hopefully you can pivot and, hey, people out there, since I'm being honest for you, so.
You see, stop being so unique to the vendors. Be nicer. That's all. All right. So definitely.
I had a couple of vendors that said that they fully appreciate everything that I say about them.
Give them a first pass to respond, and then if they can't come correct, then just shout it out. It's like if you find an exploit, go to the guy, let him know that he's got a problem, and then within 6 months, if they don't fix it, then just gracefully release it.
There you go.
I know. You mail him a bag of poo. I get it. Questions and comments, definitely keep them coming on the Facebooks. If you're old school, like a lot of us, contact us at thebrotherswisp.com actually works. So you can shoot them there. I've got that going to my main inbox, so I always see that stuff now. No more excuses. Other than that, I guess thank you guys for being on the cast, and thank you guys for listening. Bye.
See you.